great. So anyways, back to my story of what I was saying. Ryan and I were at Ninja Nation this weekend.
Yeah, we were.
With a bunch of little kids. It's kind of like a Ninja Warrior gym.
Yeah, Ninja Warrior place. Like, they have obstacles. They have things you hang on.
What is it called? Parkour. Yeah, kind of like a parkour gym.
Like rock climbing.
Yeah, even though we didn't use any of the rock climbing stuff. They needed to replace that with something better.
Yeah.
More fun. Anyways, so I was down in this big...
Pit
of air.
It's like a
blow-up air pit. It's not a foam pit. It's different.
It's when you fall, you're protected.
Yeah, so anyways, I was trying to get up, and Ryan was just pushing me down and not helping me up.
Yeah, I was.
Which I don't understand why.
I do.
I was not getting dopamine released then, you know? Weren't.
I got
what's the opposite of a dopamine release?
Not having it release.
It was a dopamine valley for me.
Valley.
I went into a dopamine valley. I was below my baseline.
Let's talk about it because we were trying. It was basically this obstacle where you had to grab on to like this red swing that had a solid handle. And then you had to swing and jump in midair and a couple, because we were trying for like 35, 40 minutes.
Yes.
All of us, it was like us and like four friends. And the next obstacle was like this weird thing that if you grabbed on one side, it would tip down. So it was really hard to hold that way. So what you had to do is we had to swing out both hands at the same time, jump, and then catch this next one.
Can I just say that I was the first one to get this?
You were. That was good. She got the first jump. All right, let's be clear.
And then, one person just has to get it, and then everybody else follows. That's like Usain Bolt, you know?
Mm.
He beat whatever time, and then everyone started beating that time.
Cracked the code, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so Lauren did it first, yes. And then my other buddy and I, we would get to that second one, and then you'd have to swing really far to get to like the next jump, which was the same jump, which was two hands catching the thing. And eventually, we both did it. You make it, and then the last one's like the first one where it's kind of easy to catch, and then you make it across the platform.
Yeah.
And Lauren didn't celebrate me. So that's why she pushed.
I honestly, because I didn't see, baby, I would have celebrated you so hard.
It was a great accomplishment.
If I had seen it.
It was a great accomplishment I was not celebrated for. So when she said, help me, I said, no.
And I had no idea why. I was just getting pushed down into this pit.
Yeah, pushed you in the pit. Yes.
So I was sad. And then also, on top of that, Ryan didn't include me in our group chat to plan this whole thing.
Yep. But I learned this.
I was left out of the group chat.
Wait, there's something very important here. We learned it in church.
Mm-hmm.
That anybody who doesn't have an iPhone is just a sinner. And they, you know, they need to amend for this by getting in. And so that was the reason that week I couldn't
add you. That's what you took away from that church service.
I thought that was hilarious.
Android users are sinners.
I don't remember how he said, but it was hilarious. He was like, oh yeah, and then you're in a group chat and like the messages are green. How are the mess? But anyway, that's what our group chat was. It was green. I don't know who, but because of that,
I think Sophie's a sinner.
Whoa, we can just
dirty. Wait, just kidding. I could check that right now.
Anyway. We're not going to throw anyone specifically under the bus, but somebody in our group chat.
We could, though.
Doesn't.
Sophie is a sinner.
Okay. So it was her fault. So you can actually be mad at her because I tried to add you to the group chat, and then it said, no, you have to create a new group chat because somebody in here is an Android user.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it said.
AKA, they're a sinner. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of my dear friend, I just messaged her and asked if she wanted to go to a croissant class.
Oh.
So, you know, spike her dopamine a little bit.
Ooh.
With some good bread and croissants.
There it is. 72 layers of buttery goldness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to learn. Anyways, okay, to start off with, I have a question for you, Ryan. All right.
Yep. Got an answer.
Buddha said, life is suffering.
Buddha.
Do you agree with this?
Life is suffering.
Life is suffering.
I mean, when I just take that at face value, no, I don't agree. Because I feel like if it was only suffering, then why would we even want to exist? Why would you even want to do? Because I can think of a lot of things right now off the top of my head that is not suffering.
Mm.
Yesterday, we went to an improv show at Chaos Bloom, shout out. Chaos Bloom Theaters off Broadway in Denver. Freaking.
If you want to come see our show,
no, we're
we
not.
Are performing.
No, we're not.
We got to tell the people.
We don't want anyone to actually come. That we
yes,
know.
We do.
No, okay, sure. But we only, yes, we are performing because we've been doing a 6-week class.
8 p.m. See you there, Chaos yeah. Bloom.
But their main, they actually didn't tell us their group name. But like the main people, I think it's 8 p.m. every Saturday or Friday night. No, Saturday night.
Saturday night.
Every Saturday night at 8 p.m. is like the people who own the theater. They have like an improv group. And it was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, it was great.
It was so good.
Yeah, we
$5. Literally, I mean, it was free for us because we're students.
We're students. Uh-huh.
But for a general public, $5. That's yeah, a steal.
That was a great time. I'm so happy we went to
so,
that.
So, highly recommend them.
Okay, but what about this statement? This is a quote from Anna Lemke, who is the author of Dopamine Nation, which we'll reference that book a lot. And she says, I really think it is uncomfortable to be alive. It is a constant state of restlessness and discomfort.
No,
what do you think of that statement?
I just don't agree with that. I don't know. That's not how I feel. I don't.
Your baseline compared to everyone that I have met in my entire life, going off anecdotal evidence here, I think your baseline is higher than most other people's.
Baseline of?
Dopamine levels.
Ah.
Yes.
Like I'm just.
So how much dopamine is pleasure. Constantly circulating in your body, I think is higher than the average human.
Wow.
Yes.
We should test
especially,
that.
Especially, I bet we could. Might be expensive to test
do
that.
A YouTube video.
But especially being
Go
your
fund
partner.
Me. Howdy, partner.
I see every single side of you because we are together constantly.
Are you saying that I'm like a fish on a pedestal in the middle of the room and you can see all 360?
I don't know what that means, but I'm
Earlier,
saying...
remember? Yes, you're saying...
I'm just saying that I know you very intimately because we are constantly together. So I see your good side, your bad side, you're all in between. All
don't
those
have
things.
A bad side.
And I think your baseline is higher than the average human because have you ever been around somebody whose
yes.
dopamine is – they're just constantly kind of not fun to be around. Their dopamine yeah. baseline is just lower. They have lower motivation in life. They have lower – like tenacity, they have everything is just a little bit lower.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would never have, especially, I don't even know now, but especially before doing all this research, I wouldn't have associated with dopamine. I just thought they were not as fun.
Yeah.
And I just thought they're kind of being like, I don't know, lazy maybe. But there's mm-hmm. a lot of reasons, but like, because motivation is from dopamine. So technically, if you have lower dopamine, you will be lazier. And that's not like an assault on your character, it's just how our brain works. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's I've always kind of felt that way sometimes. Like, and it sounds bad, but like with working out, when people like have so many reasons and excuses, and I'm like, well, you're just lazy. I don't know. That sounds mean, but which we will learn. There are
Ryan.
What? I'm not. I'm just being truthful. I'm not saying that that's how I feel, but I think that, and I don't think it's wrong to think mm-hmm. that sometimes, because when I'm saying that, I'm not saying about that about general people. I'm saying that about people I know. Mm-hmm. Like in circumstances back in the day, not like now. Now is much different. We're older, but like when we're in college and shit, I'm like, all right, bro, come on. We got time for this. Like there's no reason. That's what I'm saying. Back in the day, those were my young 20-year-old toxic potential thoughts of
and
like.
We've grown from
we've
that.
We've grown,
yes,
but I'm like, bro,
have.
Like, come on, you're just being lazy. You know, yeah. like let's go lift. No, I don't want to. All right, you're lazy. Like, how am I not, you know?
I know. Yeah, I feel like.
I think that's fine to think.
Yeah, to like the uneducated person, then it's just kind of face value of yeah. just like, oh, well, you're lazy.
Yeah.
But I feel like, yeah, after doing all this research and understanding dopamine a little bit better and how it works in your body and it's a whole system and how everyone is different, yeah, I feel like you get a little bit more respect and kind of like you give those people, yeah, a little bit more leeway of just like, oh, that's why they are the way that they are.
Yeah.
You know,
okay, so let me ask you, do you think life is suffering?
I think that 80% of life, maybe not 80, but a high percentage, more than 50, of life is about doing things that you don't want to do.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So, and I've always kind of said that. And the life that is, you have to do those things.
Yeah, or you're not going to have the other stuff that's fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And you wouldn't know it's fun if you didn't have to do things that sucked.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, you wouldn't have something to compare to.
Yeah, if you're always happy, you wouldn't know what happy is.
Yes. Yep. Yes. So yeah, that's why, and they were talking about this, Andrew Huberman was talking about this, your baseline, it's important to have your baseline. You can't always just stay in a peak of dopamine. It is, yeah, it is not possible, and it wouldn't be helpful for you.
Even though I feel
like some,
yeah,
people will be like, yeah, I always just want to be in a peak of dopamine and it would be so much fun and yada, yada, yada. But no, our bodies were not designed to do that at all. Ooh. We were designed to have a baseline level of dopamine. And then when we do something, whether it's actually good or bad for us, we do something that creates dopamine. There's more dopamine released in our brain, which we call a dopamine peak. And then it goes down and it's called a dopamine valley. And then when it goes back to baseline, then that's just your normal homeostasis of dopamine.
Of dopamine. Yeah. And I just thought of a sick improv character. Okay. You could be like Dopamine Daniel. Sup, dude? Daniel. I'm Dopamine Daniel. And everything that I do releases dopamine, bro.
Everything I touch releases dopamine.
I'm peaked on dopamine all the time, bro. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yep.
Okay, I think we should go over what dopamine is. So do you want to kind of give us...
Yes, but I do want to
explanation.
I want to readdress that because I guess when you... And I'm sure, you know, Buddha was trying to be controversial back in the day. Probably he's trying to...
It's well, like, back in the day, life kind of was a bit more suffering probably than it is now. I'm just going to throw that
but it's
there.
Almost like clickbait, like Buddha is... Because I feel like the word that I just don't sit well with is the suffering part. Because when I think about suffering, I'm like, all right, yeah, I've suffered and it's been like gnarly, but like that's not my...
What word would you replace it with?
I think you said it really well. Like there's a lot of... Like life is sometimes things you don't want to do and sometimes things you do want to do.
But I feel like, yeah, I mean, and we'll get into this. I feel like life is the process. You have to enjoy the process of it.
Yeah.
And the process is like your little scale going up.
Yeah. Know? The process is you got to pay it. Basically pay it forward. Like you got to pay your dues. That's what they always say for like fishing. That's like a common, like yeah, you show up to a gold medal river, you're not just going to catch the biggest fish. You could, but that's what everybody always, oh no, you got to pay your dues.
This is what I said to Ryan the other day of being fit is like paying rent.
Ah, yes.
You have to pay your daily dues, your monthly dues, maybe not your daily dues because you can take a day off.
Yeah.
Right.
But you're still eating healthy and you're still sleeping. Uh-huh. That's still fitness. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You have to pay your daily dues. And like, so you have to pay rent, you know?
And that's
like,
why the.
How many days out of the month did you work out? How many days out of the month did you eat cheat meals? How many days out of the month did you get 7 or more hours of sleep? You know, and all of that adds up to your rent, which is your fitness.
And that's why.
And if you don't pay it, then you get kicked out of the fitness group.
Yeah.
Get kicked out of the club, the metaphorical club, of course.
And that's why also one of the more common quotes that obviously Bobby Axelrod from Billions invented himself, not anybody else in this world, as you know, he's going through the crisis right now on the show, but that is work hard, play hard. That's, I feel like that is, even though it's cliche, I think that's kind of like more what I associate that with, like life is suffering. It's like you still have to work. Because you can't just go out and have all this fun unless you have money, generally speaking, right? Like, once you get older, you need money to enjoy yourself, like, so to go do activities.
I understand what you're saying for the work hard, play hard thing.
I don't mean, like, the job, necessarily.
But I think when people say work hard, play hard, who do you imagine?
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's not a good...
You know?
That's why I said...
It's some old, like, middle-aged man that is making bad choices, probably drinking on the weekends.
Oh, that's who you
cheating
think?
Cheating on his wife.
Whoa.
Being like, work hard, play hard, you know, boys.
Damn, I actually think...
That's who I picture saying work hard, play hard. I know what you're meaning by it.
Yeah.
Of just, like, you have to put in the upfront effort to get the reward, and if you don't put in the effort, you don't put in the time, the energy, the dedication, blah blah blah, then like that reward and that dopamine is not going to be as great kind of thing. But yeah, when I think of work hard, play hard, I think of like some tech bros being like, let's get drunk, bros.
Yeah.
Work hard, play hard.
Yeah, I guess that. Or I was thinking of like, yeah, fraternity bro or something. But just that's why I specifically said Bobby Axelrod, because he does work super hard so he can play hard, you know, because he's got billions of dollars. But
yes,
that's more, I think, how I want to think about it. But all right, time to get into what is dopamine. We're learning. It's complex. It's very complex stuff. We're going to break it down as simply as possible. So really all dopamine is basically something that is released when you do an action. And depending on the amount released, you are more likely to do that action. It's essentially a feedback cycle. You do an action, dopamine is released. That is pleasurable. So therefore, you will want to do that action again. I think that's like a very simple way to understand it.
And dopamine is a neurotransmitter. And yes, what Dr. Huberman said, it is the universal currency of foraging and seeking. So it is the driver for us to seek all things. Everything that is living. No, I'm not going to say that. All animals, even worms, have dopamine.
Ooh.
Fun fact.
That is fun.
Worms do have dopamine. Why? Because they are still little organisms that are seeking something, even if it is to procreate or food or just to sustain life. Yeah, so all animals have dopamine that relates to foraging and seeking.
Yep. And really quickly, so dopamine being a neurotransmitter, essentially, a very easy way to think about it is, you guys all know about nerves. Essentially, with nerves, how they work is when a signal is sent through, it's an electrical potential, it's electrical signal, is sent through one nerve. Say that nerve has dopamine in the end, right? You just think about little dopamines floating around in the basically the butt end of a nerve. When that action potential reaches the end, that nerve basically exocytosis, which is a fancy way of saying like pushes out all the dopamine, mm-hmm. and it goes into the space between another nerve. So there's your first nerve, second nerve, and there's space in between. The dopamine goes into that space. Then the next nerve has usually, it's a very simple way to think about it, usually receptors. So it has specific, there's five dopamine receptors. That's not important. It'll go to one of those, bind to the receptor, and then it will have a direct effect on the next cell. So that's kind of how dopamine works, is when it's expressed, when it's released, when we do an action, it causes the next cell down the line to have an effect. Usually that effect is pleasure, happiness, mm-hmm. reward, right? And that's how it works.
And I guess the main thing that I want to get across in this episode, this is going to be a two-part episode, is that with dopamine, you have a baseline, and there are always, I know we kind of mentioned this, there's always going to be a baseline and then peaks and valleys. So the peak is when your dopamine goes up, the valley is when your dopamine goes down. And the higher the peak, the greater the valley. So no matter what, if you peak, it will go back down and then it will eventually go back to baseline. And something that I found very interesting when researching for this episode was the layering of dopamine. So for example, I'm going to use the gym as the example. If you go to the gym and you listen to music, right? Your music gives you dopamine. Then you also are with a friend and that gives you dopamine. And then you are also in your favorite gym outfit and you're looking really, really good. That gives you dopamine when you look in the mirror. And then you're lifting legs and that's your favorite body part to lift. So that gives you dopamine.
Said
so
no one ever.
All of those layers is going to create a very, very large peak. And then it will create a valley as well.
Yeah, bigger valley.
A bigger valley because you had peaked so hard because you had layered on so many things. So the next time that you work out and you don't have as many layers, say you just have a cute outfit at the gym. No music, no friends. You're lifting upper body. You're lifting chest,
depressing.
Right? It's sad. Then relative to the layered experience that you had, this experience is not going to give you the same peak, which is actually a good thing because you want to have intermittent peaks. So what that means is sometimes you want to listen to music at the gym. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you want to do a workout class, and then sometimes you shouldn't. So if you create, say, like a higher peak for the gym, and then you, the next time, a lower peak for the gym, and then the next time, a medium peak for the gym, all of that is good because it's not consistent. You want inconsistency with your peaks in dopamine, which sounds kind of bad.
Yeah, but it's like anything. I mean, everything in moderation.
But it makes sense because it's like the novelty almost of it.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense too because if you keep doing something the exact same way, and it's the easiest example, I think, is drugs. When people think about drugs, alcohol. Let's say alcohol, right? None of our listeners obviously do drugs. Alcohol, though.
Or drink alcohol, right, guys?
Oh, right. We're all freaking perfect. But tolerance is a thing.
Yes.
And that's for many different reasons. I don't think that, and I actually know that doesn't specifically have to do with dopamine, right? Mm-hmm. Your body gets used to all things. But I think that's a good way to think about it is like other activities, you have tolerances. And so if you go out and you always just hit the peak dopamine, then your when you don't hit that, your motivation will be lower. Mm-hmm. So you want to kind of like, you still want to convince yourself to do it, which we'll get into kind of how this all works in your brain. You still want to have to be able to do it when you know it's not going to be the best. I think that's a good way to think about it. Mm-hmm. Like when you are going to work out by yourself in your home gym, wearing sweatpants, it's like not ideal. It's cold. It's not going to be the most pleasurable. You still need to do that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like that fluctuating, or like you're saying, you want to like have intermittent, almost like fasts of dopamine. Mm-hmm. So, and that, go ahead.
Well, I was going to just say one more thing about dopamine and exercise. So dopamine is released when you exercise, and it's different in the sense of like drugs, right? Because there is upfront effort for the dopamine to be released. And the cool thing about exercise is, say you're doing a bout of exercise, say like an hour workout class or something like that. So about halfway through, maybe it's hard to start. It's hard to get there. It's hard. The warm-up's hard.
Usually is.
But then you get into a little bit of a groove, right? And that's because your body starts releasing dopamine, and it's designed to do that. So when you exercise, your body starts releasing dopamine, and your dopamine levels actually stay up for exercise. So they start getting released about halfway through what you're doing, and then they will stay elevated. And the thing with exercise is it's not going to have that huge crash that
like drugs or
like
alcohol.
That drugs or alcohol or these easy like
TV,
social media kind of thing. Like say you're going to the bar, and then I don't know, there's so many other examples. We all know kind of easy dopamine hits, yeah. Right, or junk food.
I mean, posting a picture on Instagram, sitting on your couch, getting a bunch of likes is pretty easy.
Yeah, super easy.
So
that feel good is not going to last that long. And then it's going to have a bigger valley than the exercise because there was so much upfront effort that you had to exert to get there. So I just found that really interesting. And then also when I was watching the podcast on DOAC with Anna Lemke, she was saying that she was talking about addiction because she deals with a lot of addicts, and that we love to gamify anything and everything. And I love to gamify anything and everything. And people can get addicted to exercise. And it was very interesting because she got addicted to romance novels, which I was like, what? And then you hear her talk about it and you're like, oh, that totally makes sense. Yeah. So, and I thought it was interesting because I have definitely gamified exercise in the sense of with Whoop, like constantly checking my Whoop score, constantly checking my sleep score, checking like my glucose monitor. I have gamified exercise in a way that at some point, especially in prep, was not the healthiest, where I was checking my strain multiple times a day. How many calories was I burning? How many calories was I burning? That's like all I cared about. Like I would check it multiple times an hour.
Yeah.
Now, and I still do that, but now it's not as bad. So, I've kind of come down from that, but I do think that that is very interesting. And I've heard like, the ultra marathon runners and stuff like that, they, excuse me, like one of the people that I know that runs ultramarathoners, he was a guy I went to high school with. He was like, his body was like shutting down and he was still doing these ultra marathons. Wow. And you even hear, you know, David Goggins, a lot of people know him, and he ran on broken legs and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like you can be addicted to certain stuff like that. And it can be a bad way with exercise.
Yeah.
So just prefacing that.
Yeah. And perfect segue. Because addiction, obviously dopamine has almost everything to do with addiction, more or less. So the reason that it is, you know, easier for some people to get addicted and harder for other, you know, a lot of that's genetics and how you grow up and all these things. But the reason where it can feel, because essentially you have this area of your brain called the nucleus accumbens. That is what is responsible for like the addictive behaviors, and the dopamine in that specific area is going to really reward you for doing the thing you're addicted to. So a good example would be drinking alcohol. If you're addicted to drinking alcohol, you know, going into it most of the time before you start drinking, I shouldn't do this. This might lead to me getting a DUI, me having a divorce, me being a bad parent. You know all these things, but the second you take a sip of that, you can basically think about that portion of your brain, the nucleus accumbens, takes over all the other willpower you might have, all the other responsibilities you might think that you might, you know, mm-hmm. it's gone. Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to control this circuit, because all it's doing and thinking about is pleasure, essentially. Mm-hmm. So this circuit is like, you do something, there's a certain amount of pleasure you get from it. It wants you to repeat that to get that pleasure again. Mm-hmm. So when you take that sip of alcohol, it's like, oh, here we are. Okay, let's just keep doing this. Everything else is secondary. And that's where people get in a really bad spot with addiction, because it's, and you start
neglecting your family, your job.
Yeah, because that's all you want. That's all your brain wants. Mm-hmm. And so what's really interesting is with that, it's essentially an unconscious assessment. So when a different example than alcohol would be like, if you're a college student, should I study or should I play video games? Mm-hmm. It's pretty classic. Or like for girls, what should I study or should I, what'd you guys do instead?
Instead of studying.
Yeah, like, you know.
Scroll social media. Okay. How about that?
There you go. So for guys, should I study or should I play video games or watch sports, right? Watch TV. Uh-huh. Or girls, yeah. Scroll social media or study, or maybe you guys watch like a reality TV show. I'm just being pretty broad, generalizing. So essentially, there's another area of your brain in the front called the prefrontal cortex that is responsible for your willpower. And it's subconscious, so you can't even really think about it. It will assess, should I study or should I watch sports?
X, Y, and Z. Yeah.
And it will basically make the decision for you based on decisions you made in the past and how rewarding it was. Because your brain doesn't know like, oh, video games is better than studying right now. No, it just knows that video games has rewarded us, whereas studying kind of sucks and it's like not very rewarding. So it's a lot easier if you go back to the alcohol thing. It's like way easier for your brain to be like, yes, my relationship with my wife or with my kids is important, but alcohol is more important. And it's a subconscious, you don't even think about it. Like I'm saying it right now, like you would think about it, but you don't. It's happening unconsciously. Mm-hmm. It's underneath what you can actually consciously think about, which is just weird to think about. Well, it's a lot of thinking, but.
Yeah, I mean, I can relate to this in the sense with binge eating after my show of, I would call it like you just kind of black out and you don't think, and it's just your subconscious taking over and be like, we want food. We want the dopamine hit. We want it now. Like everything else comes secondary to that.
Yes.
But, and then it's like and I started journaling a lot when all of this was happening, and the journaling allows you to bring that subconscious to your conscious awareness of like, if that, then what? You know, of if I do this,
yes,
then what's going to happen? And you can still make the choice to do it. But once you make that choice, it's like you're more aware of what you're doing, and therefore it's less pleasurable.
Yeah, right? You might feel guilty.
Yeah.
And yeah, so with a lot of this information, especially Lauren literally just said exactly how I was about to say it. there is a guy, Doctor, he calls himself Dr. K on YouTube. His channel is Healthy Gamer GG. He's a doctor, he's an MD, right? But he's a doctor of psychiatry, works with addiction. And he was explaining all this, and it's super cool because essentially what he said is exactly that, is if you have to, you can't think about it because it's subconscious. So you need to write it down like, all right, if I drink or if I eat, binge eat, this is what could happen. Whereas like, if I don't, this is what could happen. By you like physically writing it out, you can't think about it. You have to actually write it down and like plan it. Like, okay, what's
That's
my day look
I feel like?
Like
writing out is like makes your thoughts more organized.
Yeah, and it's you doing the assessment instead of you allowing your prefrontal cortex to do the assessment is how he explained it. And yeah. I really like that. So you're taking control. And then exactly what he said is you might still choose the wrong thing, but you are aware. And
at
it feels
least,
more.
Yeah, there is conscious awareness. And I feel like that's the biggest thing with binge eating too. And like when I was doing my book club with binge eating, it's just bringing that awareness to light. And say you know, didn't make the conscious choice and you weren't aware and you didn't write or anything like that. But then afterwards, you can still reflect and be like, okay, why did I make that choice? What happened throughout the day? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I feel like this is where we can talk about HALT. You want to tell us what HALT is?
Yeah. And yeah, we can also talk about how this directly feeds into the next part of all this discussion. Mm-hmm. But essentially, HALT is from Alcoholics Anonymous, which is cool that they have something that this, like, this explains a lot of behavioral and addiction psychology. HALT is an acronym for hungry. I was about to say hangry. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired.
Tired, yeah.
So those four emotions, which are all negative, right? Essentially, with negative emotion, you are going to seek dopamine release more readily. Whereas if you have, so the higher negative emotions you have, so if you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, you want to release dopamine more because dopamine equals pleasure. Therefore, your body's like, we need pleasure. We're in pain, right? It's a way to think about it. If you are not necessarily in pleasure because that'd be like you're releasing dopamine, but if you just have more positive light, like you're not hungry, you're not angry, you're not lonely, you're not tired, you have what we'd call more positive emotion. Therefore, you're more resistant to seeking dopamine release because you already feel good. Mm-hmm. Like, why would I need to go do something? And I think a lot of the times with this, you think about when people come home from work and it's a stressful day, they drink. They drink more. Or when you're tired,
they eat a bunch of crappy food and sit on the couch.
They eat shitty food. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone can relate to this. And so it's cool that it comes back to the dopamine.
Well, and it's very interesting for an alcoholic or for anybody that is in recovery of any sort from whatever addiction, you have to be even more conscious of like, what will make me angry? What will make me tired? Yeah. What? Because then you are, if you know those things, then you can try your best to take yourself out of those situations or not let a situation get to that. So, because then you're less prone to relapse. And there was a very interesting study that they did with rats where they got all these rats super addicted to cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
And then they took away the cocaine and the rats basically went back to normal. Everything was fine and yada, 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 whatever. And then, so then they got a whole new set of rats addicted to cocaine the same way. And
basically, they'd press a lever and they could get cocaine ad libitum.
Yes.
Which means as much as they want.
Yes. Yep. And so then the second batch of rats got, and then eventually, so they would press the thing and the cocaine, it wouldn't come away.
Yep.
Or they wouldn't get dispensed. So then the second set of rats got like an electric shock. And then they just went back to try to get the dopamine like again and again and again.
Because they were in pain.
Yeah, because they were in pain. And so they had all these little lasers going through, all these little lasers going through the cages to see their activity levels. So when the rats were addicted to dopamine at like the highest level, they were constantly just running around, running around, running around, running around.
Addicted
to cocaine. Which and then is the dopamine. Second set, they got electrocuted and they acted the same exact way. Wow. They were running around, running around, running around, trying to get the dopamine back. So that just goes to show if you are in a real, or if you're dealing with something that's difficult, you will go back to what gave you that huge dopamine hit from before.
It's gonna be a lot easier, yeah.
It'll be so much easier because you...
And feel better.
Yeah.
You're completely...
And I feel like that's why people go on these like binges. So like, you know, an alcoholic has been clean for 7 years and then one bad thing happens, you know, say a loved one dies or some very, very stressful thing, and they relapse, and then they really relapse and they just go on like a bender. So because that they had been deprived for such a long time. So I just thought that was very, very interesting and quite sad. And another thing with children, they are way more susceptible to stuff like that from the age of 25 and earlier.
Okay.
Well, no. From, because that's when your brain kind of like solidifies. Like a lot of your pathways have solidified.
Especially for men. Yeah. It's a little later.
Yeah. You're kind of like set in your ways.
Yeah.
So, you know, humans, little young humans that are exposed to really, really unfortunate things, their brains are way more malleable. So it's just a little bit harder for them and more, it's unfortunate for them. And I feel like some
people, going on in life, yeah.
Yeah. And some people are just born into bad situations and they were dealt a poor hand, which is very unfortunate. And that's what they do in AA. It's like you acknowledge what has happened to you and you can like really acknowledge your victimhood, but then you have to be like, all right, then once you do that, you can move on to the next step of just like taking responsibility as well.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, if people know, which a lot of people will, there's a movie, Good Will Hunting, with Robin Williams and,
Robin Williams.
And then I'm totally Mark Wahlberg, the other dude, Jace, the Bourne Identity guy, whoever that guy is, I'm totally drawing a blank on his name.
I thought it was Mark Wahlberg. No?
No, Bourne Identity is the other guy. But anyway, that dude, who you guys all know that I'm talking to. I'm not the most pop culture guy. But anyway, there's a very famous scene in that movie because the main character, super smart guy, like ridiculously smart. Like he's doing like NASA equations essentially, but he's a janitor.
Mm.
Robin Williams, a psychiatrist. And there's a famous scene because the janitor is like super pissed. He's had a really bad life. He's just always angry. Mm. And he's not letting himself use his full potential. He's like making it. He doesn't want to be successful because he has like the victimhood of like all this stuff happened to me. Like, Bob, it's my fault. Like, it was his parents. Like, there's this whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous scene where Robin Williams just, because he's his therapist, but obviously the other guy's like, no, screw you, dude. Like, I don't, you know, they hate each other.
Mm.
And he just hugs him and he's like, it's not your fault. And he starts crying. And it's like this whole thing. And after that, he becomes like this super famous scientist, because all he was trying to show to him was exactly what you're saying, is like, these things happened, but you're taking it personal and you're letting it hold you back.
Well, I think it's also some people attach themselves so much to that narrative of being a victim.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like everybody probably knows a person like that. And you just want to like shake them and be like, stop.
Yeah, that's what he did.
Stop doing that.
He
like
literally
you
did
a self-fulfilling prophecy, which we have talked about a good amount on this show of, you know, what you put out into the world is what you're going to attract, and what you say will happen. You know, I think it eventually will.
Yes.
So if you see yourself as this victim, you're going to find ways to confirm that you are one. Oh, and you know another thing that I learned about dopamine that is very interesting? Dopamine is released when you hear something that you have, what is it called? You've already thought it. Like you, like say I have these thoughts in my head and you say them and I like, I'm like, oh my God, like he sees me. Like I agree with all of this.
I do that all the time.
And like the confirmation of it.
Like, okay.
The dopamine is released.
Interesting.
So I feel like that's why like politically people can get really into their bubble and very.
Because they're always saying the stuff they want to hear. And thought.
Yes. Yeah. It's this confirmation bias of just like, oh, they think like me, that like I have dopamine released based on what they're saying, because what they're saying is something that I also agree with.
Mm.
And so now we're friends and I've associated you with this dopamine hit. You are my tribe. And like they are
against us.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So which I thought was very interesting.
That is interesting. I did not know that.
But if you think about it, I mean, it makes sense. If you say something like, oh my God, I was just thinking that. Like, of course, that's a dopamine hit.
It feels
good,
yeah.
That feels good.
Yeah. It's Matt Damon, by the way. So
okay.
Super famous actor. All right, yeah. This is when he was like really young though, which is kind of cool. But anyway, so on all that, you need to follow along with me on this, okay?
Okay.
I'm going to make you a rat. Okay. You can be like a cute rat. You can still have your cool hair. Yeah, thank you. Okay. So you're a rat and you're in a cage.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first study, you'll have normal dopamine. So I'll put food in the cage for you. It's normal food. It tastes okay. But if you press a lever, you actually have to jump up on the lever. Then down the chute in your cage comes like really good tasting.
Ooh, is this a scene? Should I improv this now?
It's like a Chipotle burrito. Woo! Yeah.
You're jumping on that.
Oh, yeah. So that's what comes down with the lever. Okay.
A Chipotle burrito. I like this.
Yes. So you will press that lever, right? Because it's rewarding and you're good to go. If we take another scenario and you were born, because what they can do with rats, they call them knockout mice, knockout genes. They can literally go and splice genes out of rats so you don't have dopamine.
Which is just so cool.
It is cool.
And crazy.
I remember learning about that. I was like, because it was always like KO and they have like fancy names like 199, sip, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, what the hell? And then when we learned it's KO is knockout. So they knock out a certain gene because it's such a controlled way to test. And then if we knock out dopamine, you have no dopamine. You will not press the lever ever.
Yeah.
And the other one that was from that podcast, the Diary of a CEO, Stephen Bartlett, even more fascinating than that is that when they knocked out the dopamine in those mice, they would put the food, which is necessary for survival, a body length away. So I don't know how a rat's what, like 4 or 5 inches maybe. So let's say they put a piece of food 5 inches away. They're starving to death. They have no dopamine though because they knocked it out. They won't move. They won't. That's they will not like get that piece of food.
Dopamine goes back to foraging and seeking.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It's motivation. Dopamine is motivation.
But that almost blows your mind that with no dopamine, obviously no one has zero, right? But they have zero. They would die before they used energy to stand up, take a step or two, and eat a piece of food. So that goes perfectly into a really good way to think about all this, and I'll give credit to the Dr. K, Healthy Gamer GG. He essentially said, when you wake up, and this is a simplistic way to think about it. When you wake up, say you have a full tank of dopamine, right? Your dopamine's high, baby. If you wake up, you think about it as a lemon. If you have half of a lemon, and I gave it to you, and I said, okay, Lauren, here's your lemon.
Ryan gives you lemons.
You make lemonade. So I was like, all right, Lauren. Squeeze this as hard as you can. Right? You'd get all the juice out into the glass instantly.
Into my greens it goes.
There you go.
Yep.
And it's gone, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if I gave you the lemon and said, all right, squeeze this like half strength. Like a lot would come out still.
Some drops.
Yeah. And then in like 2 hours, I'd be like, okay, squeeze it again, half strength. Some more would come out. Maybe another hour, you'd do the same thing. It'd get harder though to squeeze it out, right?
Yes.
But then at the end of the day, if I was like, okay, Lauren, here's the same lemon you've been squeezing all day. Squeeze it as hard as you possibly can. You could do that, right? You'd squeeze it. You have a lot of strength. And you would still get like actually a decent amount of juice probably left over in that lemon because you've only been squeezing it half strength the whole day. So the point of that metaphor or example is if you wake up and do something that is highly dopaminergic, which is such a fancy and hard word to say. Basically meaning dopamine releasing. Like if you do a highly...
That doesn't require a lot of upfront effort.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Sometimes... And
like
I mean,
exercise doesn't really count for this.
No, we're talking like getting on a bunch of social media playing video games, watching TV, drinking alcohol, smoking weed, like drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Having a bunch of sex, right? Like these... Watching porn, let's be honest. These kind of things.
Can you imagine doing all those things in the morning?
So that's the point. That's where we're going here. If you wake up on Saturday morning and you just did a bunch of that kind of stuff, think about it as like if I gave you that half lemon and you just squeezed it as hard as you possibly could, all the juice is gone. Then the entire rest of the day, you have no juice. Because if you do activities that otherwise would release some dopamine, so say like exercise or some like cooking, like cutting up some food, that's going to be a reward if you have dopamine. But if you have none left, you're not going to want to do that. So what are you going to do? You're going to order DoorDash. because that takes no effort, mm-hmm. right? You're not going to want to put effort into going and working out mm-hmm. because you have nothing left to give. So the point of that, and I really like how he said it, is you should always try to do the things in the morning that are less dopamine releasing, like the things that are still good for you. Mm-hmm. So going to the gym, you're going to release dopamine from that, mm-hmm. but it's not like a woo, like this is amazing. I feel incredible, right? Because yeah. it's not the same level at, because there's effort involved. Like you've said, the effort that is involved kind of outweighs the consequences of dopamine being released in a way. Mm-hmm. It's an easy way to think about it. Whereas if you just woke up and played a bunch of video games, that almost takes no effort and it's a ton of dopamine. Mm-hmm. So you're just rinsing it. And then for the rest of the day, the motivation you have to do things that you might need to do is lower.
I mean, it just makes sense to me to spread your dopamine out through the rest of the day. Like throughout the whole day is like if you wake up and exercise, yeah, you get a little bit ahead of dopamine. Then you come home, have a good healthy breakfast, a little bit, you know, of dopamine. And then you go to work, you do your work. Maybe it's not that fun, blah, blah, blah. But then you go out to lunch with your coworkers. Nice, some dopamine socialization there. Come back, work a little bit more. You're like, ah, okay, done with work. And like since it's been a good day, you know, no super high peaks in dopamine, no super, super like low valleys, then you're like, okay, I can go to the gym. Like it's yeah. been a good day.
Yeah.
You know, but if you just like woke up and you woke up late and then it was stressful and then you fought with your spouse in the morning and then your coworker was mad at you and then you come home, there's just less motivation to do stuff too. So I don't know. I was just like thinking when you were talking about that, like personal.
Yeah. And that goes things. Back to the negative emotion. You won't, because technically, I mean, I think everyone can disagree, but like exercise, though it releases dopamine, is not a highly rewarding activity for most people. Mm-hmm. Like it's not something where if you're hungry, angry, lonely, and tired, you're like, let's go to the gym. Like, mm-hmm. hell no. When you, let's just be honest, like we could take three of those, angry, lonely, tired. If you just had like a massive breakup, probably those three things, right? You're not mm-hmm. going to be sleeping as good. You're definitely lonely and you might be angry depending on if maybe they cheated on you.
Yeah.
When you, most of those people aren't going to the gym. When that kind of stuff happens, like you're seeking low effort, high dopamine releasing activities. And what kind of goes back to what he was saying and kind of what you were just talking about is actually when you do things that you might otherwise not think are like dopamine releasing, mm-hmm. when you have a full level. So say in the morning, let's just go with the example again. If you have full dopamine and you studied, or maybe you got ahead of your meeting and like took some notes, and like those things will actually release more dopamine because you have more. So mm-hmm. therefore those will actually be more rewarding to you because you have so much dopamine. Mm-hmm. But, and that's why he also kind of praised or like said to, if you can, first hour of the day, don't even look at your phone. Because the second you look at your phone, so many traps of dopamine.
I need to be better about that.
Like, and that makes sense.
With the phone is sometimes I use my phone to wake up a bit. Like I will kind of, normally I'll wake up before my alarm and say I'm waking up at like 5:30. I will look at my phone because it's light. So my eyes are like waking up and I'm adjusting. And then also seeing things, like my mind starts waking up a little bit more, I think because of the dopamine hit. So I know this is not good. This is not good. But I understand sometimes why people look at their phone first. I do it for like 5 minutes and I'm like, okay, I'm awake. Like my brain is a little bit more awake. I can get out of bed now. But I'm not dumping dopamine, you know?
Yeah. But it is.
I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah.
No, you're not. I'm not saying I'm dumping.
It depends on what you're doing on your phone, I guess. Because yes. You could easily, if you woke up, instantly start watching like a YouTube video that was just super, not educational, just pure entertainment.
Yeah.
You are. Because think about what effort did it take.
Or
you
if reached I like, over, had posted something before, like yeah. the night before, and then I woke up and a bunch of likes were on there and comments, I'd be like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
That would be a dopamine hit that I would yeah. be like, okay.
Because, yes, but you just have to think about the effort. You literally reached over,
yeah, there was
didn't
no
even
effort.
Move in bed and looked at a screen that was this far from your face. Yeah.
And your body is just not used to that. Our body's not used to having such accessible dopamine all around us, with like highly palatable food, social media, all those things. We were, our hunter-gatherer ancestors did not have what we have right now.
I mean,
so I feel like we almost have to be very cognizant and put ourselves into difficult situations to get dopamine that requires effort. It is important to do, I think, every single day. And some people have just gotten so accustomed to not doing that because they don't have to, because that's where our world is right now. Which I feel like, I mean, okay, you can respond to that. But then I want to talk about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation and when you should try and schedule your dopamine dump.
Yeah, because unfortunately our world, but it's our fault, but our world has now paved the way for low effort, high dopamine. Because I can think of so many examples, but DoorDash comes straight to mind. Whereas like when you used to have to want to go and get food, you had to get in your car, you had to drive, you had to maybe wait.
Which is still pretty easy, but
easy, but it was effort and time and commitment. Now I can sit at my TV, order DoorDash, and literally I can just say, leave it at my door. I don't even have to talk to a person. There's no effort involved whatsoever.
Yeah.
So even something like that, or like the grocery thing, and
or
I'm not
dating too.
Oh, dating. Oh, that is, and that's, I told you about this because it kind of like, I don't know, I'm somewhat passionate about it, but like, especially with COVID and all the things, but like a lot of guys, they have found, have become a lot more lonely. Right? Like a lot more guys are staying.
I feel like it's bred, this like convenient life has bred like the incel group.
Yes, exactly.
Of men.
Like living with their parents still, very lonely, don't know how to talk to women. And unfortunately, that's because a lot of, I mean, let's just be honest, but like our animal brains, a lot of like men finding women is for like reproduction, just like generally speaking. So if you can almost get the same satisfaction by watching porn or looking at, you know, Twitch.
Because it used to be high effort to get that
stuff.
Oh,
yeah. It still
very
should be.
Effort.
It's
yes,
gotten a lot
it
lower.
It should be.
We can blame both groups, but let's just, like, OnlyFans, same thing. Like, and I've seen crazy-ass videos of guys paying so much money for these girls where they think, they're like, oh, I love her. They don't even know them. But they think that this girl is their girlfriend.
Yeah.
They're paying tons of money to her because she sends them messages.
And like just with
insane.
Just regular porn addiction, if you are watching porn, you have to up your game every time to get, I mean, that's just the same with alcohol. You have to
tolerance.
Drink more.
Yeah.
You have to watch crazier things. And that never leads to a good place. But anyways, I do want to talk about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation when it comes to dopamine. So intrinsic motivation, they did a very cool study with kids. Actually, it's not that cool. It's a little sad. But where they were looking at rewards. So like an extrinsic motivator would be if I don't know. Give me an example of like an extrinsic motivation situation.
Extrinsic would be like, I go to the gym to get muscle mass.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I want to look. It'd be more simple. It'd be like, I go to the gym to look a certain way. Like vanity.
Like there is a reward.
Or
that
you go
comes
get your
afterwards.
You go get your hair done or eyelashes done to look a certain way, to feel.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. So like, yeah, but I guess let's use that example. An extrinsic motivation would be like the lashes that I get after I walk out of my appointment. But the intrinsic motivation to go get it would be like the process of getting my lashes done. Like, oh, I get to like socialize with my lash lady. I get to, you know, feel good because it's like a little therapeutic while I'm sitting there, and I get to relax and close my eyes and yada, yada, yada. Like that's like, I guess, the intrinsic motivation for it. So with dopamine timing, you want to time your dopamine while you're in the process of doing the thing. So you don't want to dump your dopamine before you do an activity or after you do an activity. So even though people like the reward of getting something, the best time to do it is like the process. And I feel like people know this, like, oh, enjoy the process, you know? Like, don't just do it for the trophy. Don't just do it for the win. Remember to enjoy the journey. But that is what you want to do. You want to enjoy the journey and try and get that dopamine in the process of that spike, I guess. So I wrote this down. I was like, it hurts now. Like what you need to say to yourself is, it hurts now, but this will give me like a bigger dopamine hit later kind of thing. So when you're in the suffering, just be like, okay, it's kind of like the type two kind of fun of just like, this sucks now, but it's not going to suck later. And this suffering will allow for more and different multiple spikes of dopamine in the good kind of way. But anyways, they did this study with kids, and these kids just loved to draw. They intrinsically just loved drawing, and they studied them, blah, blah, blah. Nothing about the drawings. And then they eventually started giving the kids rewards. So they would draw things and they would get a sticker, a snack, or a piece of candy, whatever. And then they took the rewards away and the kids stopped drawing. So the intrinsic motivation for drawing went away because the reward was there. Where before, if when there was no reward, they were just enjoyed drawing.
Just drawing.
Yeah, by themselves. And I don't know, it made me a little sad to actually hear that story.
Yeah. And that, I mean, and that's where we talked about that. That's where it gets really tricky. Because it's like, I mean, not even like think about parent to kid, but you yourself. Because a lot of people will reward themselves for doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I went to the gym. I deserve this meal or whatever.
Yeah, I get ice cream now because I...
And it's just tough because like if you think about that for yourself, you're like, damn, how am I potentially wrecking my motivation to do things?
Yeah.
And I think that's where I actually thought about it when you said that. I didn't say it earlier. A lot of the times you hear people where they turn their passion into their job and they stop. They don't like it anymore.
Mm.
Like sometimes professional athletes, like in college, they love, right? And like this is not the most common example, but you hear about it. They love their sport. Now mm-hmm. they get paid, so it's totally different. But back then, they didn't get paid in mm-hmm. college. They just did it because they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it became their job, and it became stressful, way more stressful, and potentially, obviously, a lot more lucrative, but it comes with a lot more responsibility, and they end up kind of stop liking it as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of goes back to that, is now there's extrinsic. It's like, based on your performance, you are going to have a paycheck. Maybe you're not going to have a paycheck, like, there's a lot of other...
I just think it's a slippery slope when you're so focused on the reward.
Yes, like you still have to do it for the love of the game.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's
like
where...
the effort is the reward.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to get lost on this example. But some people out there will understand my passion. Long story short, there's a basketball player many of you guys know called The Beard. His name's James Harden, and he was on a shitty team. Okay, I'll explain so you understand.
Okay.
He was on not a very good team, mm-hmm. right? Oklahoma City Thunder. Then they drafted two of the best now players, definitely one of them, two of the best players of the time. So there's mm-hmm. now three players on the team, super good.
Mm-hmm.
He was the sixth man, though, which means he comes off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
But he won sixth man of the year, which means he's the best player in the league to come off the bench. They, that year, obviously you know who LeBron James is.
Mm-hmm.
They had a stacked team, LeBron, right? They, like, traded people to get this really mm-hmm. extremely good team.
Mm-hmm.
The Oklahoma City team went to the finals against LeBron James' team, and I think they lost on game 7. So they took mm-hmm. them all the way to the end and lost.
Mm-hmm.
And that next year, James Harden wanted to be traded because, first of all, he didn't want to come off the bench anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, he wanted more money.
Mm-hmm.
So he got traded to a trash-ass team.
Mm-hmm.
Guess how many championships he's won? Absolutely this many, zero. And that just pisses me off because that is exactly what I think. And I get it. Of course, you could argue, well, yeah, of course he wants more money. But that's like where I'm sitting there like, don't you want a championship first? Like they could have won next year probably. That was their first year together and they almost won. And he went straight for the reward, right? Like he didn't care about being good. That's my point. He went to a shitty team.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not,
just
and like,
for more money.
Because he wanted to be the all-star, which is fine, but he wanted more money, I think, is more of the
but
thing.
But also, I feel like this goes back to when people win the lottery.
Yeah.
Like when people win the lottery, a lot of them are not well.
No, they don't do good.
Mentally, they are not well because there was no upfront effort.
Yeah.
It was just gifted to you. And I feel like this also goes back to rearing children as well, of just like, if you constantly give your kid everything that they want, when they want it, how they want it, there's no effort, there's no struggle,
what are they gonna want it?
You are going to breed the worst kind of child.
Yeah, because they're not gonna have any intrinsic motivation to do things.
Mm-hmm.
They just want to do things for rewards. They don't want to do it for the love of the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like you have to get your kid to fall in love with the reward.
That's right.
Not fall in love with the reward. Fall in love with the process.
So I think the final thing, we've been going for We've been going for a bit now, but I think this is, at least I'll come up with my example. You can maybe think of one too, and we can end it. But that's that. Now this really makes sense to what I was talking about earlier with, like, because I was basically trying to ask Lauren and figure out, like, well, this is hard because of things that I love. It's like, I still love doing them, even though I should be getting less dopamine from them over time. But it's like the process of it, and it's more of a means to an end, not necessarily just a means to, like, I guess like alcohol, like you get drunk to get drunk. Like you drink to get drunk, right? Mm-hmm. If you're an alcoholic. And that's kind of short-lived. It's like one day to the next. And obviously that's how it gets addicting. But when I was thinking about like archery, like elk hunting, right? Bow hunting, is if the first time that I was like, hey, like told my friend, like, yo, man, I want to come bow hunting. He's like, all right, cool, man. Come with me. I'm like, all right. And then I sat there next to him in a blind, right? Sitting there, and we had a heater. And he's like, oh, here comes one now. I'm like, oh, sick. And say it's 30 minutes into shooting light. So 7:30 a.m. I got there at 7 a.m. He hands me his bow that I have nothing about. He's like, yeah, just pull back, man. I'll tell you where to aim. Aim right there, and I'll tell you when to press the trigger. Okay, cool. And I do all that, and then I shoot a huge bull and kill an elk 30 minutes into my first hunt ever, knowing nothing about bow hunting. I feel like that would crush all of the, like, the remaining years. Mm-hmm. Like, you would probably be mad. I'd probably still want to do it. Mm-hmm. But the point is that since it doesn't happen like that, since I have to go every single week and, like, train and, like, make sure I'm physically fit, I have to shoot my bow, I have to make sure my bow's dialed, I've learned so much about it. Mm-hmm. I've now gone two years in a row, right, without getting an elk, and it's just continuously building. It's like I love the process more than the actual reward. Mm-hmm. And when I get the reward, of course, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, and it's part of it. And I feel like there's a time and a place for the reward.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't necessarily do all of that stuff just to never...
No.
Just for funsies.
And it's... Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm saying is, like, activities like that where the reward is so rare and the reward is also has to be earned so, like... As so much effort has to go into it to be earned, that's where, like, the dopamine shift is. Mm-hmm. Is like the effort is disproportional to the reward almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the reward, not in terms of how much dopamine you get, but it's just like you have to put in a lot of effort to get, even if it is 10x dopamine you've ever had, still your effort put in is so much higher.
Yeah.
That's where I think all this makes sense now to me, is that if you choose activity, same with exercise. I've been exercising for 11 freaking years or so. Mm-hmm. And it's the same. It's a similar thing as, like, there's not really a reward. No, I mean, really, like, a big reward at the end. Like, oh, it's one day I'll achieve this thing. It's like just day after day after day after day. It's rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never,
but it's
like
the same thing. I feel like exercise is the same thing with, like, food.
Yeah.
There's no end reward for the, like, the last meal, the last supper. Like, that's not why you're continuously eating, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I would argue that, like, eating is pleasurable and eating does release dopamine, but there's no end date to it. And, like, exercise is pleasurable and it does release dopamine, but there is no end date, like, oh, on, you know, April, you know, 15th 45 is my last day I'm gonna exercise. No.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's more of just like a habit based
day
but
to day.
Do you want to know something interesting that's kind of like free dopamine?
Ooh.
So they did a cold exposure study, and they looked at people's brains while they were in an ice bath. And, you know, everything was safe and all that kind of stuff. And they were very much so regulated. Guess the increase in dopamine. Don't look.
I think I remember.
Do you already know?
No, I don't remember it specifically. Is like 30 or 40%?
No, it's 250%.
Oh.
Yeah. That's above cocaine. And just like exercise, it lasts. There's not a huge valley afterwards. Your dopamine kind of stays up and then it goes back down to baseline.
So that's why that's why it's safe to do then, kind of thing. Like, you won't get addicted to it because
it's... Yeah, you won't get addicted to it. But it is relatively easy, but it is also difficult in the sense that you have to endure it. And there is effort that is put into it. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of stuff that starts lighting up in your brain when you're cold.
Interesting.
So I was like, oh, maybe we should
start
a nice bath or something, even though it's like so...
They're pretty expensive to get like a nice one. They're like thousands of dollars, unfortunately, now. Because it kind of blew up after... Because I was Huberman that talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of blew up after he all started doing all that.
Yeah. But so, I just thought that was super interesting.
That is a good also ending, because that next time what we'll talk about is more of like hacks, like that kind of stuff. We can talk about like dopamine hacks and more of how it works. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we actually covered everything, to be honest.
No, so. I feel like we covered a lot, but I do think that we should do a part two in how people, like, we can give more tips and tricks that are relative to people's day-to-day life so they can optimize for their dopamine, right? You know, we can talk about more of like the lemon squeezing and, you know, getting sunlight and, sleep and how all those things affect your dopamine levels. So
okay, more holistic.
Some more tangible tips for people to take away, because I feel like we covered a lot of the
science.
The science and the baseline stuff of how dopamine works, and now I feel like we can kind of explain how people can use it to their advantage.
To motivate you to do things you might not want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
There you go.
That's why we're about to go to the gym, because we're so freaking motivated.
Just kidding. We both are.
No, we're going to go. We're motivated to go.
We're motivated to go take Obi to the dog park.
Oh, what a lucky dog. What a lucky dog